Justin, I want to start off just your reaction. I mean, it's so predictable in some ways. In other ways, I just find it distressing that, you know, you get this big, obviously, announcement yesterday, blockbuster, historical, changing the shape of 2020, the election. And that is, of course, the Mueller report that has come out. No collusion in any way. No indictments coming down. No obstruction. And uniformly, the Rhode Island delegation, White House, Reid, Langevin, and, of course, Cicilline, all, oh, we got to release the report, blah, 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 all running cover. I don't know about you, but I just, it's, to me, it's, I'm not shocked by it, but it's so distressing. It's basically, in my eyes, we don't have real representation in Washington because none of those four ever represent how I feel about things. I don't know about you.
Well, I think you put it exactly correctly. It's not surprising, but still distressing. What struck me in the language of the Mueller report itself apparently refers to Russia's attempts to sow social discord in the United States, and that seems to me to be exactly what our Washington delegation is doing. They're trying to sow social discord and just to keep the issue alive. I mean, you've got Senator Whitehouse with no substantiation at all talking about how the Attorney General is engaged in a cover-up, and when really they just didn't find anything done wrong. And it's just distressing that would continue to be the case, and we couldn't just, after 2 years of this circus, just, you know, move on and maybe start to actually govern our country.
That's exactly right, you know, and govern the country. You would think after something like this, Justin, this would be, and I also want to say good afternoon to everybody on Facebook Live. Again, if you're on Facebook, go to my Facebook page. It's John DePietro Show on Facebook, and then you can be part of our Facebook Live broadcast that so many people like to, and I see various people there. There's Michelle and Marcus and Kenneth and many others and Chris. But, Justin, that almost seems foreign now. Instead of, like, let's just get back to the business of hand, I think in some ways they were so, especially Cicilline, they're so vested that there was this collusion and this was going to lead to impeachment. And, you know, they're going to lead the Trump kids out of the White House in handcuffs and blah, blah, blah. And even to me, what's kind of comical is even the 2020 frontrunners all seem flat-footed. It almost as if they start to believe the headlines and their own press releases that I don't think, to me, they had a plan B on what to do should something like this happen. So then you get someone like Sheldon Whitehouse saying, well, now it's a conspiracy with the Attorney General.
Yeah, that's probably a big part of it. Although I also wonder if, to some extent, it is a cover-up in itself. I mean, what came to my mind was, with the Mueller report, at least what we know of it so far, is back when then FBI Director James Comey came out and in great detail explained to the American people why Hillary Clinton should be prosecuted for her activities with the Secret Server and all that stuff. And then went, yeah, but nobody would really prosecute it, so we're not going to. This is like the reverse. Mueller's report says, we found no evidence of collusion. We're not going to answer the question of obstruction of justice, which to me was a way they could keep this whole thing alive by not answering that question, because the answer is obvious. There was no obstruction of justice. And so they've kept this alive. They've explained to the country why there's been no collusion, no evidence. But, you know, even so we're still going to pretend there's some kind of a cover up here, and it makes you wonder if it all goes back to covering up their own malfeasance. Maybe if they let the issue come to a rest, people will really start to say, "Well, don't we then need some kind of accountability for the craziness in the news media for 2 years, or the insane words out of a lot of Democrat legislators' mouths over the past 2 years?" Maybe if they let it, they fear that if they let the thing come to an end for real, then they'll have to start to answer those kind of questions. So if they can keep it, oh, it's an Attorney General cover-up, or he's not exonerated, and so on and so forth, people, maybe they'll be able to get past the initial shock, and people won't demand accountability from them.
I want to move on. Last night, I thought it was pretty dramatic. Let's go into some local politics. You had the Democrat Party meeting this past weekend. The Republicans are going to meet next weekend regarding the leadership of the party. And I think it was on either Thursday or late Friday, it started to word broke out that State Representative Maura Walsh, that the progressives and the progressive women, the Reform Caucus, that they were kind of announcing their own slate of candidates. And they chose, for whatever reason, but State Rep Maura Walsh, she was taking on Joe McNamara to be the chairperson of the party. You had Lauren Carson of Newport, who was then going to challenge Grace Diaz as the vice chair because Diaz, that why would she be challenging a Latino woman? Because Diaz did not vote along with the extreme abortion bill. So they view, boom, we have to go after them. Pretty much same thing for Maura Walsh. And then you even had Tansy, Representative Teresa Tansy, announce her challenge to Arthur Corvisi for party secretary. And again, same type of reason. This is all over an extension of the abortion vote, extreme abortion bill that did pass in the House. We're still waiting for it in the Senate. But what I'd like to hear from Justin Katz is, for a party that, in many ways, boy, they're the progressives, they're certainly loud. They've gotten a lot of attention. They're very, very demanding. They certainly, as I said, they screech and they make their presence felt. But let's look at the vote total. So the Democrat Party, they get together, the Cranston Portuguese Club, and Joe McNamara wins 144 to 28. Grace Diaz beats Carson of Newport 134 to 31, and Tansy loses to Gulp, a pro-life male, white male, 126 to 40. What is your thoughts on, number one, them challenging and running, and then what the vote total ended up being?
Well, at least with Maura Walsh, what do we hear Friday that this was going on? You can't help but compare it to on the Republican side, where you've had weeks of people running for the chair. And here it's, you know, within a few days, and suddenly the Providence Journal elevates that, Patrick Anderson's reporting elevates that to, we have a bona fide fight for chair. Well, okay, well, show me evidence of any kind of fight.
I mean, yeah,
it's sort of the image of the big brother holding his little brother's head and the little kid swinging at him, trying to hit him. I mean, that's the image that comes to mind. So it makes you wonder how much of this supposed progressive movement, progressive wave, is really just a construct of some activists in the news media. And if that's the case, a lot of the people who, even if they get into office, how much of it is just people not really paying attention, and they get swept up in what the names they hear a lot in the Providence Journal or other media and vote them in? So I think this was probably a bigger hit to the progressive folks in the General Assembly than most would expect. It was kind of starts to make the whole thing feel a bit like an illusion. And if that illusion starts to fade, they're in trouble, because that's basically what gets them things like a vote on the floor on abortion, because people are buying into this idea that there's a progressive wave. And if there's not, then they've got nothing.
You know, you're exactly right. That is an excellent point, because the front page of Saturday's paper was power play. And it had, you know, Maura Walsh, her photo was actually bigger than that of McNamara by Patrick Anderson, announces her candidacy. Progressives pursue control of Democrat state committee. Power play, as you say, bona fide fight. And then, you know, Justin, if anything, one of the problems with what they did was they were better off with this myth that they had all this power. They were better off with this facade, if you will, of that they had all this potential power. One of the worst things you can do is demonstrate that it's really like in The Wizard of Oz, you know, the man behind the curtain, that when it came down to it, one of the worst things you could do is you don't make a move unless you truly feel you have the votes. And to me, Walsh and Tansy, what was that all about? I mean, for them to mount a challenge and then not even remotely close. I mean, no one can say, well, you know, they certainly had McNamara on the rope, so that could have gone either way. I mean, when you get trounced and get only 28 votes, and he has more than 100 votes than you do, this wasn't 44 to 28. This was 104 to 28. They actually would have been better off continuing to speak out, maybe be critical, but not let everyone see that the emperor, or in this case, the empress, has no clothes on.
Oh, well, exactly. You need to, when you're not in a position of strength, you need to let the other side not know what your strength is. I mean, that's just basic gameplay, right? So the problem is that progressives don't think strategically. Some of them can control the masses, but in general, they tend to think emotionally, and they also tend to think in a way like evangelical. I mean, I don't mean to insult evangelicals, but in a way like religious zealots. They think they're right. They think they're destined for success. And so they charge in righteously even though it's strategically a very, very silly thing to do, and we should hope as thinking Rhode Islanders that they have damaged their brand quite a bit in this quote power play headline.
Well, one of the things that you're right, there's a bona fide fight for the power, and it turns out there was no bona fide fight for the power. It was all a smokescreen. But it also comes back to, for instance, Gail Golden, Senator Gail Golden, big progressive. She's trying to get in line up. They want to get the extreme abortion bill out of Senate Judiciary and get it to the Senate for a floor vote. And Gail Golden is saying, oh, you know, I can count votes. We have the votes for it. I just wonder about that. I wonder then, because it is about counting the votes. Do you think, and it's tough to get inside their minds, but do you think in this case, the progressives that ran for power, did they feel like, you know, we need to do something? We can't just sit on the sideline. We know we're going to get crushed, but we need to at least give some kind of an opposition. Or do you think they actually thought that maybe they could get some momentum going and take over the leadership of the party?
I think, looking at the players and what we know about their way of interacting with their colleagues, I think they probably did. Their strategic approach is probably something like, yeah, we'll run for three seats, and even if we only get one, we'll be good. And, you know, the wind's at our backs. All my activist friends are saying everybody they know supports us. So I think that was probably a good part of it. I mean, if they were thinking strategically and trying to build up their momentum and their influence, what they would do is threaten for a few weeks and then pull back at the end and go, well, we're going to wait and see what the Senate does on abortion or something like that. And then they'd be building up the mystique without actually having to prove that they can win the fight. And so they don't think strategically like that at all. And I wonder what the effect, it's good that you bring up the Senate vote on abortion or potential vote, because we've been discussing what might happen there, whether the Senate is sort of the designated end road for that legislation this year, and maybe next year they'll switch and the Senate will pass it and the House won't or something like that. It makes you wonder if this power play failed as it was, might actually make it a little bit easier for Senate President Ruggiero and other socially conservative Democrat senators to say, yeah, let's just let this quietly die in one of our committees and not bring it to a vote and test these progressive waters a little bit.
Yes. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. It's Political Monday. We're speaking with Managing Editor OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Let's switch over to the Republican side, which they're scheduled to have it. It's this Saturday. And the Providence Journal has a big story that there certainly seems to be a lot of infighting. You have the four individuals that are vying for it to be the new head of the GOP. Michael Vary, who I've interviewed, who ran for Senate based out of Woonsocket last year. You had Susie Yankee, who was the head of the East Greenwich Town Council, who, by the way, who came in last and failed to get enough Republicans. They flipped the council in East Greenwich. They had Robert Lancia. He lost his race in Cranston. And also then you have this Rebecca Schiff. Two times she has run and lost in Jamestown. And this whole race has really become the Team Fung, the people that support Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, and they're backing this Rebecca Schiff, who is a pro-choice Republican out of Jamestown, who even admitted she wrote in the name Carly Fiorina in 2016 against. And then you have the other three with Vary, Cianchi, Lancia. Now, there was another candidate, Ken Mendonca, who then pulled out, but some of the Republican cheers, they kind of issued three that they thought it should be decided amongst, and it was Vary, Cianchi, Lancia, and this Rebecca Schiff. Lancia seems to be man without an island, simply because he was not listed as one of the three that some of the party faithful support, and he's not Schiff, who seems to be the Trump faithful. A lot of number of people are writing and speaking out against this Rebecca Schiff, who seems, they say, is really nothing more than, you know, being put up as like a puppet by the Fung people to control the party. What I'd like to hear your thoughts on how this whole thing breaks down.
Well, I think probably some of Rebecca Schiff's comments help to give a framework to answer that question. I mean, she says she's pro-choice, but that she thinks we need a big tent in the Republican Party. And I think that statement gets to a lot of the disagreement, because I think just about every Republican in Rhode Island will agree it ought to be a big party and we ought to work together in the old, I forget how Ronald Reagan put it, it's I'd rather work with somebody who agrees with me 80% of the time than push them away because of the 20% we don't agree. I think most Republicans in Rhode Island will agree with that, but you need, as your standard bearer, as one of the people who's supposed to be holding up the pillars of your big tent, you need that person to agree with the basic platform of your base, which is pro-life in Rhode Island and across the country. So I think that's a good emblem. I think that's a lot of the opposition to Schiff. A lot of it is, yeah, we would love to work with somebody like that. We hope she stays on board, but this is the person who's going to be upholding our values at its base. And I think that's where a lot of the disagreement goes. And of course, there is just this bizarre factionalism among Rhode Island Republicans, which I, after decades of trying to pay attention to this stuff, I still don't fully understand why people get so angry at each other. But there is a lot of that just the connection to Fung is accounted among some as a fatal problem for Schiff. And that shouldn't be the case. But I think you'll probably see one of the other three maybe coalesce, and it's probably going to have and somebody become front runner of the non-Schiff group. And I would guess it's going to have a lot to do with how well they articulate that balance of working with people, but still upholding the basic principles of their caucus.
I think you're right. And one thing that I learned and heard is the Republican Party for 2020, I think they correctly see an opportunity with the way that this extreme abortion vote went. And you had the members of the Republican Party going pro-life. And what I think is interesting about this, the abortion debate that for so long has been dormant, and mostly because it's the law of the land of being Roe v. Wade, and that you have everyone, so many people actually, just saying that they are, in fact, pro-choice, and that was accepted. And it really has been. As someone that has interviewed so many different politicians locally and people running for office, it has not been a big issue with that in any way. So from what I understand, the Republicans see an opportunity because of you had so many Democrats, pro-life Democrats, voting for it. And it's a new issue because of the New York-style extreme abortion bill that they have put forward. So when you have someone like Schiff, and that was, different of Barbara Ann Fenton, Alan Fung, May Cranston Mayor Alan Fung's wife saying, I'm pro-life, but I support Rebecca Schiff. That is not in keeping and in touch with where the party is going, where the party sees we could get a lot of Democrat and independent votes for people that don't support extreme abortion. There's another element here, Justin, that I still believe that someone should be held accountable for, and it's the following. And you can talk about different ways, and people criticize the way the Fung campaign was run. But something to me that no one has answered, and that is, I just wonder if someone within the Fung campaign should have been more privy to or seen that as a result of Kavanaugh, or let me put it this way, from what we understand and we've learned, one of the reasons why Matt Brown couldn't get a lot of traction against Governor Raimondo is because Raimondo had made deals with Emily's List and Planned Parenthood that she was going to support this extreme New York style abortion of birth legislation they were going to put forward. Now, Matt Brown, that kind of left him, that took a lot of his engine out, because otherwise, if Raimondo were a more moderate Democrat, he could have had that and used that as an issue. But the point I want to get back to is that the Fung people completely did not find out, made themselves aware. That was valuable information if they could have unearthed that regarding Raimondo, meaning if they could have made that an issue back just a couple months ago in October, November, this could have been a different election outcome. If they could have made and put Governor Raimondo front and center, put her on the spot, would you support this type of extreme legislation going forward? So my point is, I don't think Rebecca Schiff is in keeping with, if you have Blake Filippi, you have Chippendale, You have Newberry. You have the Republicans, Sherry Roberts up there. And they're all voting against this extreme abortion. And the fact that so many people are upset about this, that they're jamming this through, and a number of Democrats voting against it. Then, you know, Mattiello voted against it. Corvese voted against it. That the Republican Party are sensing that there is an opportunity here with this issue, not to revisit Roe v. Wade, but to revisit the extreme abortion bill the Rhode Island House just passed. Schiff is out of touch with that if she wants to just hold on to the mantle of, I'm pro-choice, we need a big tent. This is not about a big tent. This is about, to me, you have to use this issue in order to find your lane of travel to try to get some moderate Democrats or get independents for 2020.
Well, I think the only change I'd make is to expand that out beyond the issue of abortion. I think a lot of what we're seeing nationally and locally, and this may not have been predictable before the election, so casting the calculations back to that, I don't know whether that would be entirely fair. But so you think of things like the push for transgender teaching in elementary schools and taking parents' rights away from being able to guide their children in that kind of a decision. Or you look at economically at the push for raw out-and-out socialism at the national level. I think there's an extremity to Democrats nationally and certainly in parts, factions in Rhode Island that is terrifying to the average voter and to those more moderate and even not so moderate Democrats who are looking at that and saying, we're going somewhere. I don't know if I can go. And I think that's going to be an important, that's what the opportunity that a lot of Republicans are smelling is that ability to say, even if we disagree on pro-life, pro-choice, we're sane. And you can come to us and work with us to be sane.
Right.
And I think that's a key part here. And I think this also is a problem in returning to the GOP chair race for Michael Varry, because he has continued that sort of classic talking point of wanting to get away from social issues because they're scary and they make us look like bad guys. I think that's what's changing. But I think to go back to the point before, when you're the chairperson, you know, you want that open tent so you can say, look, you can be, you know, pro-choice in the first trimester, second trimester, if you want to work with us. But our standard bearers are going to uphold our views. That's the firm foundation of our open tent, our big tent. So I think that's the opportunity, is to be sane, but it also still requires a strong foundation in sort of the more classic Republican or traditionalist values.
I agree, but I want to just stay on point. If you're running, they can't be all over the map. When you have a poll that comes out that says 75% of Rhode Islanders are against this extreme abortion bill that just passed, boom, there is your issue for 2020. If Rebecca Schiff is suddenly just carrying the old mantle of, oh, well, I'm pro-choice, I think she's missing the point. And I think, all due respect, you know, Barbara Ann Fenton, who I know and respect and like, she's missing the point that is emerging as the issue for 2020. And they, to me, the Funk people missed the boat by not seeing that was going to be the issue that the Raimondo people wanted to put forward. I want to just interject for a moment, because just a short time ago, I read a tweet by Michael Avenatti that said tomorrow he's going to have a press conference involving Nike. And now I'm seeing on Twitter, Michael Avenatti, who was the attorney for Stormy Daniels, has been arrested and charged attempting to extract more than $20 million in payments from Nike by threatening to use his ability to garner publicity to inflict substantial financial and reputated harm. So there's wire, there's bank fraud. So New York, L.A. prosecutors announced the charges. So Michael Avenatti, who just announced that he was going to be going after Nike and having a big press conference, he just got arrested and has been indicted on this. But Justin, I want to come back, and I know some people are saying that the Republican Party is broken, but I think what you're seeing right now is a little bit of them trying to play out. One of the problems before we jump on to the education commissioner, one of the problems in this past election was you had former Rep Joe Trillo and Patricia Morgan accusing the Funk campaign of the party is rigged and blah, 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 and they control the party and da, da, da. And this is a little difficult that you have some pretty prominent Republicans from, you know, Brandon Bell, the current GOP, saying Alan Funk should focus on Cranston. And then you even had Matt Smith, who's a Cranston municipal judge, coming out and going after Vary. And then you have Barbara Ann Fenton, you know, saying, which makes no sense to me, I'm pro-life, but I support Rebecca Schiff, who has lost twice and voted for Carly Fiorina. I think the Funk people, again, have to be there. It's like they're ignoring what happened where Morgan and Trillo were saying that Funk controls the party. And once again, they're trying to put this woman in, Rebecca Schiff, that I don't know this woman at all, but that, you know, you just your thought on that, that once again, the Funk people seem to be trying to tilt the deck towards 2022.
That's very possible, and I think the interesting underlying issue here is they seem to be sort of going by the old playbook, and I think a lot of the phenomena, not only in Rhode Island and certainly President Trump and around the world, has been this sense that there's a large number of people who aren't represented by their representatives, even in their own parties. And you see that if you have a poll where 70-something percent of people feel one way, and the people who run government, including many in the opposition party, are going in the other direction, there's a huge opportunity there to represent people. I thought of this when Ireland approved same-sex marriage a few years ago. There was something like 30-40% of the electorate had absolutely nobody voicing their concerns or their belief systems. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing here with the opportunity that Republicans are perceiving. And it could very well be that the Trump camp has laid out, not the Trump, I'm sorry, the Funk camp has laid out their strategy over the next several years, and it's still according to that old playbook where you say stay the safe Republican who isn't going to be attacked too harshly for extreme views, that sort of thing. And I think that's probably a big mistake. And, you know, if we want to go back to mistakes from the last election, I mean, embracing the Trump hat picture might have been a much better strategy for Funk.
Yes.
Than running away from or appearing to run away from it. It goes back to that missing that aggression of people who feel like they aren't represented. And you can do that while still saying, look, we want to work with everybody, but we have to represent these people. They have to have a voice. And I think that's the kind of could be the sweet spot for Republicans.
I want to see what happens on Saturday. I actually think the method they're trying to use, where now one of these four individuals suddenly gets elevated to be the chairman of the party, and then they get to go and issue press releases and do interviews and go on Lively Experiment and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. I just fundamentally disagree with that strategy. I think they need to change it. I think some of the more very well-versed elected Republicans instead should be the voice and the kind of the face, if you will, of the party, and you don't need a new niche kind of being carved. All due respect to all four that are running, whether it's Lancia that seems to have the worst chance of the four, but Cianchi, Vary, Schiff, now it's a new person, now it's someone new that they're excited they get to go with Hummel and Lively Experiment. To me, that doesn't serve you. It's just another unknown person. I think it should be focused on you're here to raise money, you're here to recruit candidates, maybe even have a committee, have these people as a committee. But to me, people that are already elected, like Blake Filippi, to me, he should be the voice and the face of the party. You don't need another individual who the public doesn't know or could go off message. It's too much of a novelty to me. You know, all these people, there's so much of they don't know what they don't know. And I think that the party needs a stronger voice. They're not going to have three interviews on things. A lot of times you just have, you know, the one interview with the party chair. So instead, I personally disagree with the way it's structured. The Democrat Party doesn't work that way. You have Joe McNamara. You have that person, whatever his name is, Alvin Say or something like that. And then many times they still send out former chairman Bill Lynch to appear on a lot of these shows to just kind of be the face of the party. So I don't go for this that then one of these people, to me, you're giving way too much power to an unknown individual. And in all fairness, I mean, none of them, I'm going to be very fair here, none of them how are they going to tell someone about winning an election? Susie Yankee just lost NEG and actually came in last in the voting. Very lost. Lancia lost. Schiff has lost twice. It's one thing you want to talk about raising money, recruiting, but they're going to be the leader of the party and they're telling people, here's what the party should be, then none of them are holding office right now. I have a fundamental disagreement of how it's going to be structured. I want to move on. And again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We speak with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. I want to get your thoughts on this new education commissioner. To me, this is another example where Raimondo is completely just checking the box again. She is, in fact, wants to just say, you know, I just appointed the first Latino as education commissioner. This woman that they've named from New York, she is obviously very accomplished. She's very impressive. But when someone comes in and all talk is she's going to focus on Providence and her main focus is, you know, Rhode Island should be bilingual, not just, focusing on English and math. I think it's a problem, Justin Katz, because to me, if I am a student in a suburban school, this business of an English learner's advocate, that is not getting children in suburban communities to, you know, really push the envelope and rise to the top. This sounds as if her specialty is going to be the school districts of Providence, Pawtucket, and Central Falls, and that is not the bulk of the Rhode Island communities.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are a number of red flags in that line with Angelica Infante Green. First of all, is her emphasis on equity, which is usually the code word for shuffling money to cities where it's not always well spent. She said she's not going to do any radical changes, but she's going to focus on implementing existing policies. A lot of this it's cause for concern that. She's here mainly to shift some of the focus to Providence and other urban ring school districts, while not really changing much of the dynamic. I mean, she comes from New York City. New York overall on test scores is pretty much like Rhode Island. And New York City is the home of the infamous rubber rooms, which is where they put the union teachers they can't fire for years and years and years. They just go to these rooms and hang out every day for full pay. There is a real risk that she's just here not to really challenge anything. On the other hand, she does check a lot of the identity politics boxes, and she's used some strong language like no time for politics right now. If she were to really identify the problems of Rhode Island and decide to attack them, she'd be a pretty formidable person to do that. And there is some, at least in some parts of the country, say Florida, where there's some hope that minority, particularly Hispanic people in education do support more, let's say, radical reforms like school choice or certainly stronger charter schools. So it's going to depend which constituencies she really gets up in arms about and tries to advance their interests. And it could be interesting. I'm not expecting it to be. I don't think Governor Raimondo would let somebody dangerous in the door, but I'm going to hold out some hope for a few months to see what she does with the power.
Well, before I let you go, but I mean, all due respect to the new incoming commissioner, everyone says no time for politics. Everyone says, you know, let's kind of rally around and so forth. I mean, to me, they've never fully explained where Ken Wagner falls short, right? He suddenly was just given enough time to land his think tank job at Brown. Where did he go short? Why would things be anything different under this administrator? To me, there's still several problems here. Number one, the teachers unions, as you know, have way too much power. I just wonder, Justin, if I think the structure they have set up within the public schools because of the power of the teachers unions, it's so powerful and so strong. I think it's almost an impossible situation in order to achieve the results that they want to achieve. And that is, many times it's smaller class sizes. You can't have all these sick days. You can't have teachers out 20, 22 sick days. Nothing tells me that the class sizes are going to get smaller. Nothing tells me that the teachers unions are not going to allow, the contracts are not going to change. Teachers still can take 20 sick days, 22 sick days. If you're a union teacher Okay, you had Deborah Gist, you had to fight through that. Then you had Wagner, and then you had to just resist that. Now you have the new person. I think it starts to become the attitude of, like, whoever you are, I'm going to be here when you get here. I'm here when you got here. I'm going to be here when you leave. If nothing is fundamentally changed, things are not going to change. If they feel, well, what we need to do is make sure all these kids that don't speak English in Providence, Pawtucket, Central Falls, we put more of a focus on that, I'll bet that they will get more of those kids speaking English. The problem is you're finding suburban school districts are failing more and more. And so, you know, so the inner city kids that don't speak English, their grades are rising. And in the suburban schools, the kids that are born in Rhode Island, who are Americans, who do speak English, their grades and atmosphere is falling, and people of means are sending their children to the public schools. Nothing is changing. You have discipline problems. You have, again, so much power. I find it interesting that one member of the media was then running to the Providence Public Teachers Union saying, well, are you going to meet with her, and is she going to meet with you? Has she reached out to you? What do you think? I mean, that, to me, that is part of the problem. I mean, you have the education commissioner. If the education commissioner is dealing with anyone, it'd be the Providence superintendent. If the superintendent is dealing with anyone, or anyone would be dealing with the education commissioner, it would be some of the principals in Providence. We have to stop elevating these union organizers, Justin, as like the leading of the food chain of educators. I mean, it's crazy. They're not educators. If you're a teacher at the school, the chain of command should be you report to the principal, and the principals report to the superintendent. We have this broken process where the media keeps running to the heads of the unions and asking their thoughts. And if I'm a teacher, do I report to the head of the union, or do I report to the principal? Do I listen to the superintendent, or do I listen to the education commissioner? My God, this business that we keep treating it all the same, it has to end, or it's not going to change.
Oh, well, I mean, I agree 100%. I guess what I'm hoping for is maybe there's a pitfall in the progressive identity politics thing, where if somebody from the Hispanic community who feels like the union has correctly identified unions as the problem, say, with trying to kill charter schools, then maybe there's an in with this new commissioner. I mean, we'll see. One of the hopeful different. I mean, and I'm grasping at straws here. I know that, but I'm always looking for reasons to look for hope. I mean, I remember when Ken Wagner came in, the newspapers reported he had no children, but they did give us the names of his dogs.
Two poodles. That's right.
Yeah,
I remember that.
And they didn't tell us his wife's name, but we knew the names of the dogs. But he had no children of his own. Whereas she comes in, she's got the minority background, the bootstraps from immigrant to successful professional. That's all very could be positive life experience. She has children of her own. She's married. One of the kids has special needs.
Yes.
So those are all areas where people who disagree with the status quo in Rhode Island could maybe find some foothold here in order to persuade the education commissioner to kind of stand up where it's obvious that Wagner was not willing to stand up, and where it's obvious that Deborah Gist got ousted because she did stand up. So she could be, if she can be reached on those grounds, she could be a change agent, so to speak. But I'm not optimistic. As I said, I don't think the governor would have let somebody in a door who was that potentially dangerous to the status quo.
Yeah, I personally don't see it, simply because, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but to me, it's you're just putting a different jockey on a dead horse. I've heard of these lines before. I agree with you. They still haven't answered, where did Ken Wagner fall short? What's going to be different that this woman is going to approach that he did not? How could he have been the wrong person? I think there's two areas, and I'll let you go with this. I think the media has given Governor Mundo too much of a free pass on two very big changes that were made with what I would consider we have not been given reasonable explanations as to why. And that is Colonel Asumco. Suddenly they just announced it's going to be Manny. No one even gets into the fact that basically Governor Mundo just had someone for 2 years at the head of state police, and then she's out. But the governor just keeps saying she made history by having, you know, the first female head of the Rhode Island State Police. Governor Raimondo also said diversity was the most important thing. If you look at the new Jim Manny command staff, there's not one female in the entire ranks of the command staff. And the second one is, everyone is supposed to just ignore that the test scores were supposed to come out in October. They delayed them. When they did come out, they were atrocious. Wagner did nothing to improve things. They then allowed him to find new work, and I believe he was being paid $250,000, and now he's just moving to a think tank at Brown. This news person is coming in, and we're supposed to think that they're saying the right thing. I fail to see it, right? To me, it's like, cheap talk is cheap, and all we've had is a lot of talk. Folks, he's the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. He's Justin Katz. Justin, great job, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks, John. Have a great time, as always.
All right, folks, there it is. Justin Katz joining us. Boy, this is terrific news of Michael Avenatti. What a day for the White House. Michael Avenatti has been indicted. I read earlier that he put out on Twitter, he put out a tweet that he was going to be holding a press conference and saying, going after Nike. And instead, he has been arrested for extortion. Now, for trying to extort $20 million from Nike, and Michael Avenatti, who I think is just... how many times has Michael Avenatti was given time on the airwaves of cable news programs, on MSNBC, on CNN? How many times did CNN have Michael Avenatti on? Stormy Daniels' ex-lawyer arrested alleged $20 million extortion scheme against Nike, embezzling clients' money and defrauding the bank. Michael Avenatti charged, press conference is scheduled to discuss the charges Monday afternoon in Los Angeles. Of course, he came onto the scene with Stormy Daniels. But the White House, what a day for the White House. I mean, this is just incredible right now. I've always thought this guy was a total dirtbag. He claimed, I know how to get a lot of media attention, and pay me the $20 million or I'm going to go after you. He was arrested, charged. He tried to extort $25 million from Nike, threatening to hurt the athletic apparel giant with negative publicity. Separate federal case, Los Angeles, embezzling a client's money. Now, he's not working with that Stormy Daniels anymore. Pay his own expense and debts, defrauding a bank in Mississippi. He was busted in Midtown Manhattan at 12:30 by FBI agents. 15 minutes after he tweeted he would be disclosing a big high school and college basketball scandal perpetrated by Nike that he supposedly had uncovered. And I read that tweet. He's represented Stormy Daniels against Trump. He was even going to run for president. A lawyer has a basic duty not to steal from his client. Boy, he sounds like a Peter Leach situation. He is going to be in federal court, a complaint filed in New York. Devise a scheme to extort money from Nike, damage their reputation. Good. I am so glad. Now, again, he's going to be going to jail. Nike had no immediate comment. In Los Angeles, Michael Avenatti accused of negotiating $1.6 million settlement for a client in a civil case, giving the client a bogus settlement agreement with a false payment date of March 2018. Wow. He misappropriated the client's settlement money to pay the expenses for his coffee business, as well as his own expenses. So the deadline passed. The client asked where the money was. He tried to still conceal the payment. This is like a Peter Leach situation. He allegedly defrauded a bank in Mississippi, obtained three loans for his law firm, and he had a coffee business. And then he was trying to extort money from... But, you know, a lot of this then falls on the media because they were giving him free access to the airwaves all the time. All the time he was being on, Michael Avenatti. What a day from the White House. What a total dirtbag. Look at that. Bank fraud. He's going to jail. Oh, my goodness. What a day for the White House. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. And I'm also seeing, boy, the city of Warwick is on the edge. City of Warwick is absolutely on the edge. Right now, I'm seeing that Ted Nesi has tweeted out that the city of Warwick now is in negative. They have a $1 billion pension liability with the firefighters, because of the firefighters, I should say. Bad news for Warwick. Moody says the firefighters union arbitration win is a credit negative. Moody estimates city's unfunded pension liabilities are now nearly $1 billion for the city of Warwick. Where is Scott Avedisian? He should be dragged in. Wow.
Let me see what else. Oh my goodness. Rosie O'Donnell admits she's had a crush on Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Woo-hoo. President Trump has been exonerated from collusion with Russia, and Michael Avenatti is going to jail. What a Monday this is turning out to be, folks. All right, 766-1380. 766-1380. A lot more ahead on the John DePietro Show. This portion of the John DePietro Show is brought to you by K's. Lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge. Remember, our delicious sandwich is no problem at K's, Cass Ave, across from CVS.
I'm on the road and my ride is going strong.
At Paul Massey Chevrolet, you get the lowest price guaranteed every day with Rhode Island's only true one price on our exciting lineup of Chevrolets. Paul Massey's one price plus true car equals our best price guaranteed, and it's only at Paul Massey, Rhode Island's number one Chevrolet dealer. Right now, lease a 2019 Silverado 1500 Double Cab All-Star 4-Wheel Drive LD for $269 a month for 39 months with $39.88 due at signing. Paul Massey Buick GMC South is New England's number one Buick dealer and Rhode Island's number one GMC dealer. Get the lowest price anywhere. Paul Massey's one price plus true car equals our best price. Guaranteed. Lease a 2019 Acadia SLE all-wheel drive for $238 a month for 36 months with $29.88 due at signing.
My Paul Massey ride.
Great selection, top-notch service, and the lowest one price only at Paul Massey.
Well, folks, remember, for all your plumbing needs, call Quartz Plumbing of Cumberland today at 401-714-8478. 401-714-8478. Quartz, C-O-R-T-S, Quartz Plumbing of Cumberland. Family-owned and operated over 20 years. Victor Quartz of Quartz Plumbing is professional, reliable, and ready to serve the needs of your family. Call Quartz Plumbing of Cumberland today at 401-714-8478. Fully licensed and insured. Quartz Plumbing of Cumberland will handle all your plumbing needs, whether it's for repair and maintenance or hot water tanks or even a bathroom remodel. Serving the people of Rhode Island and Massachusetts, call Victor Quartz of Quartz Plumbing, 401-714-8478. Are you in need of a good plumber? Call Quartz Plumbing of Cumberland today, 714-8478, 714-8478 for Quartz Plumbing of Cumberland.
It's been said that great partners can make a business great, which is why more companies look to Signature Commercial Banking from Bank RI. Because with flexible lending, premier commercial banking services, and a more personalized style of banking, it means that with Bank RI, your company has more than a great bank. It has a great commercial banking partner. Signature Commercial Banking, only from Bank RI. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Well, folks, he was at my home this morning. That's right. Ryan's Appliance Repair. I don't know what it is. The past 2 months, I've had the worst luck with appliances. My dryer broke, was not working twice. Ryan's Appliance came out and fixed it. And then this morning, he picked up the microwave. I don't know what it is. I'm not allowed to touch anything anymore. Folks, remember, when your appliance is dying, just call Ryan. Ryan's Appliance Repair at 401-710-7096. 401-710-7096. Ryan's Appliance Repair. Repairs on all makes and models of appliances, washers, dryers, dishwashers, stoves, refrigerators, microwaves, garbage disposals. Ryan's Appliance Repair. Call them today at 401-710-7096. Senior citizens discount is available. Saturday appointments are available. And all work is guaranteed for 90 days, parts and labor. Ryan was there with his dad, George. Talk about a family business. They're terrific. He was right on time. I've used him before. If you're listening to me on this Monday and you're having a problem with one of your appliances, call Ryan's Appliance Repair today. 401-710-7096. 401-710-7096 for Ryan's Appliance Repair.
You are listening to the John DePietro Show on 99.9 FM and 1380 AM. News Talk WNRI.
And folks, we're back. Boy, what a day for the White House. What a 24 hours for the White House. The Mueller report comes out. Good afternoon, one and all. Here I am. It's Juan. Mueller report comes out. No collusion with the Russian investigation. But wait, there's more. That's right. On top of that, no collusion. President Trump wins. No collusion, no obstruction, no proof of crimes. And Michael Avenatti indicted, arrested today, trying to extort money out of Nike, out of $25 million. My goodness. Good afternoon to everybody on Facebook Live. There's Chris over and under when Warwick goes bankrupt. I'm telling you, Chris, they're on their way. There's Tracy. Thank you, Tracy. Love your show. Blake is awesome. I agree. I don't know what's going to happen with the Republicans. There's Johnny Skeff joining us and a lot more. Good afternoon to everybody on Facebook Live. Thank you, Ryan. 766-1380, 766-1380. City of Warwick's in a lot of trouble. Folks, I'll tell you what else is the amount of spending that the state, Governor Raimondo, continues to do to, she just continues to spend money without any type of concern as to where this is going to lead. Zero concern, seemingly. I don't understand. And it's very, very serious, because all it's going to take is a downturn between Providence and Warwick and Pawtucket. You're talking about the four largest cities are Providence and then Cranston and then Warwick, Pawtucket. And three of the four are in distress, to put it mildly. One slight downturn in three out of the state's four major cities, boom, could suddenly be in a situation of bankruptcy, basically. And never mind some of the other outlying cities as well. But very, very serious situation. But a great Monday all in all. Avenatti indicted.
He's John D. Petro. He's really in the know with his talk show. On your radio, he's John DePietro.
I am.
Tune in your radio.
Why not?
Go get him, Johnny.
All right,
D.
I'm going to try. Hey, listen, enjoy this Monday. Thank you to everyone that called. We have a big program set for tomorrow. It's John DePietro. We're back tomorrow at 11. Remember, follow me on both Facebook and Twitter at John DePietro Show. Also on Instagram and YouTube. The Dion Experience is next. Right now, an AM 1380 and 99.9 FM.
WNRI and W236 CW Woonsocket, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.